You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
I have had many more negative experiences with female superiors than with male superiors or colleagues.
Most women are, of course, more emotional, while most men are maybe more practical. But being emotional not necessarily is negative if that connection is used the right way.
I have had some really awful experiences working with women.
I don't particularly think women are harder to work with than men as a general rule. I have worked with difficult people of both sexes, and neither was really better or worse than the other.
Welcome to Surfing Corporate, the podcast that helps to navigate tricky corporate waters. Today, we're talking about a topic that we have been wanting to address for quite a while because it's juicy, it's controversial, and people have lots of opinions about it. And here at Surfing Corporate, we do not shy away from these types of difficult topics.
So today, we're diving headfirst into the topic of mean girls or queen bees or women who sabotage other women in the workplace or those that seem to enjoy putting them down. I mean, we've all heard Madeleine Albright's famous quote that says there's a special place in hell for women who don't help other women. So clearly, if she had a quote about it, this is a topic worth discussing. Now, I do think it's worth pointing out how Eileen and I got here. For Women's History Month, you guys, our listeners, know that we wanted to shine a light on badass women in the corporate world, which we did. But during one of our pre-production meetings, someone said, you know, what if we not only talk about those positive aspects of really kick-ass women, but we also tackle the flip side of that, a very heated topic about women who tear other women down? Because truth be told, we all have stories about that. And a lot of women we know also have stories about that.
So I start going down this rabbit hole of research, reading articles, watching TED Talks, researching books, and I found a ton of great stuff confirming our initial point of view, but then I found a lot of research that did the opposite and made me pause and rethink my initial assumptions. So we thought we'd share our findings with you, and we'll also share our fascinating conversation we had with a nationally recognized authority on gender equality. Andy Kramer is also an expert on the nature of stereotypes and biases and on practices and policies to increase women's leadership opportunities. Andrea Kramer, who goes by Andy, has really spent decades and decades on this quest of finding equity for women in gendered biased workplaces. But before our conversation with Andy, I think it would be great for us to lay out what the previous research has said about what the female rivalry in the workplace is all about and where it comes from.
So Eileen, since you are our resident expert on the topic, because you really jumped headfirst into the research, how about you take us through the key takeaways of what you learned from the experts and those authors you read about on the subject?
Nothing would make me more happy, Glenda, because really the info is fascinating and truly worth sparking thoughtful conversations.
But before we do that, how about we start off this episode and the conversation by listening to some voice notes that some of our listeners sent to us about their experiences working with women.
She was a bully in every true sense of the word.
Shallow, selfish, and callous.
Her inflexibility, her threatening nature, she was unpredictable. She also could be very indirect and underhanded.
I remember her constantly reminding everyone of her title, the S before the VP title.
She was just generally a disrespectful person. Had the mentality that she had to put other people down to raise herself up.
She wanted to claim all the glory.
I think they were more concerned with the performance of bossing people around than they were with extracting the best out of each of their team members.
There seems to be a perception that women bosses are meaner, stricter, tougher, than male bosses. And we talked about that too, Eileen. I mean, some of like the toughest people we've worked with have been women.
Yeah, the Miranda Priestleys of the world. Remember her? Meryl Streep and Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah, seriously. Like, who can forget? Like, she is the quintessential queen bee. But you know what I loved about that, though? Like, you, in that movie, and for, if you haven't seen it, you have to see it because it's a classic of like early 2000s. The point is, it's a really interesting character because she really does develop all of the stereotypes of you see. Like, you see she is like the absolute leader. Everybody fears her. Everybody respects her. But because she like makes you shake in your boots. But in the end, like towards the end of the movie, you realize why she is the way she is. You know, I don't want to spoil it, but like there's a lot of reasons as to why, which is an interesting perspective to open up this conversation, because a lot of times it's about perception and expectations and assumptions. So I think that's an interesting point of view just to start off the conversation.
And, you know, if I'm being honest with myself, I think that I have felt more resentful towards female bosses or female colleagues that have been kind of shitty than towards men that have been equally shitty. You know, for some reason, I hold more of a grudge when it's a female. And I'm not proud of that. I'm just, you know, fessing up and recognizing, looking back, that that's how I felt.
Now, let me ask you a question, though, because it's funny you say that. Did you, at the time that you had those feelings, did you think about why, or you just took it for granted? You just sort of just thought?
I didn't think about the why. I just know I was like, oh, yeah, she's, you know, why does she have to be that way? She's like such a bitch. I would hyper focus on those traits that I disliked much more when it came to women than men. So after reading all of this, I'm like, oh, yeah, I kind of held them to a different standard.
A different standard, right? Yeah, I know. I did too. And a part of this conversation, which is important to have, is why we have those assumptions and why we have those feelings. And this is what we're going to dive into today. So take us through what you found. Take us through the research.
Okay, so I found several articles that referenced a book called It's Not You, It's the Workplace, Women's Conflict at Work and the Bias that Built It. And this is written by the person that we mentioned before, Andy Kramer, and her husband, Al Harris, and they published this awesome book in 2019. And this book talks about the way workplaces function today, which highly favor men and masculine behaviors. And that's a huge factor when it comes to female rivalry. But before we talk to Andy, and I'm super excited to have her on the show, I think it's important that we tell our listeners what much of the research from previous decades was pointing out as a reason for female conflict at work. And I'll point out that many of these authors are women. So most authors agree on three key factors that lead to female rivalry at work. So those are evolution, socialization, and internalized misogyny. So let's break these down. The first point, evolution. This refers to the idea that women are programmed to be territorial and competitive when it comes to other women, because we're trying to allure the best, the most suitable candidate to protect us and our children in the cave times. So that meant if we had to take down another woman that was looking at him, so be it. And their point of view is that this is something that has stayed with us, and it even translates to our behaviors today in the workplace. And get this, there's a female author. Her name is Phyllis Chelser, and she's the author of the book Women's Inhumanity to Women. And she says that evolution plays, quote, a major part in the female propensity to evil.
I can't. No, I
what
can't.
The fuck? It's just, you know, we're just born evil bitches, apparently. She also states that the target of female aggression is going to be women, not men. So apparently there's nothing we can do about this, Glenda.
Okay, listen, I'm really struggling not to be a female bitch to this female author right now, but I completely disagree with that. There is, I don't believe in that at all. I mean, I think that when it comes to evolution and that idea that's been just, you know, put into our brain since we were little, like, oh, you have to, you know, be a certain way and you have to maybe be competitive because there's not enough spaces. I think, yeah, that's a little bit more internalized. But this whole idea of that we are just evil beings, what the hell? Adam and Eve? I mean, she took that to like the whole other extreme.
Okay, so let's go to the bullet number two, which is socialization and what that means. What the authors say is that the antagonizing behaviors among women are due to how girls and women are socialized in contemporary society. So, and this is true, women aren't taught to be pleasant, not have negative feelings like anger and frustration, no, and much less towards men because, you know, you want to keep sweet, like always be nice. And then what happens is that these feelings have to go somewhere, right? Because we're human. And so what they say is that we keep these feelings in and then we strike out with actions such as gossiping, damaging reputations. Again, all going back to our propensity to evil. And this is all geared towards other women.
Wow. Okay. So this one, I understand where the idea comes from.
Yeah.
I definitely think there is a social component to this thing. And we've talked about being the mom of two girls, and we've talked about like how we express our own biases and how we've grown up, and you somehow subconsciously transfer it to your kids. And it's true. Like if you teach them from a very early age that we have to put other people's feelings before ours.
Everybody else's needs first.
Uh-huh. Everything for the betterment of the group and not yourself. Like talk about carrying all that stuff into adulthood, into the workplace, and subconsciously like telling them you're not valid, like your feelings are not valid enough to express them first and foremost. Like,
yeah, like your feelings aren't important. Yeah, I guess where I don't agree is that it necessarily translates into lashing out towards other women. I mean, I will strike out indiscriminately towards anybody that gets in my way if I'm pissed.
We are equal opportunity lashers out.
Exactly. And as part of the same idea, the third point is all about internalized misogyny. So the authors feel that girls and women have internalized society's misogyny, and that leads them to feel negatively towards women and feel powerless. When they feel powerless and frustrated, they lash out at others that are in equal powerless position, which tends to be women. The author of the book Catfight, Leora Tenenbaum, believes that we have internalized the dominant male culture, that women are inferior to men, so we depreciate our own worth as well as the worth of other women. And as a result, women become hostile, you know, and they end up belittling other women. So that way they feel closer to men, to the people that are in power. So I feel like right now I need a session of therapy.
I know.
This is so depressing.
Yeah, that's like a really depressing point of view. But it is something that you have to think about. Like, obviously, a lot of these things are subconscious. Like we just internalize them. And that's part of exactly what she's saying. But is it that I feel that society as a whole is so misogynistic that I just feel powerless and I can't do anything about it? No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. But what I think is that when we grew up, you know, in the 80s and 90s, female representation was so much less than it was today. And if there was, you know, a person in the movie, it was like the girlfriend that had to support him. Like there was no dominant leading feminine roles. So I do think that that is something that gets, you know, put into your brain. There, you know, it's always a sidekick, right? So there's no strong female roles. They're not going to be the superhero. They're not going to be the president.
The presidents are still guys.
That's true. That's true. So you kind of register that internally and it's like, well, yeah, so I can aspire to be the president, maybe I can aspire to be, you know, the corporate comms leader, which is a great thing, but why can't I aspire to be the fucking president? So I don't think it translates into hating other women, but I do think it can translate into holding ourselves back. And that's something that we're definitely unconsciously internalizing. And again, things have gotten a lot better, but there's still a long way to go.
Yeah, no, and I think when you talk about it in the context of not only gender, but also race and socioeconomic status, those are whole other factors that you have to, you know, put into account. And we're going to talk about stats later on in the episode. But when you talk about stats and then you break it down further by race and you go by white women Hispanic or Latina women or Black women, like the numbers get smaller and smaller and smaller. And then I see, obviously, the feeling of, okay, there's not enough of us up there. There's not enough of us fighting for the rest of us. And I do see how that can feel powerless to you. Yeah, but I just think it's just a heavy statement, you know, misogyny, powerless. Like those are just such big, heavy words that when you first hear it, you're like, wait, what? I think it's all an important part of the discussion and how you frame it and how you start to look at what the reality really is.
Okay, so these were the previous claims about why women were so bitchy to each other. So evolution, socialization, and internalized misogyny.
Yeah.
Now, the more recent research shines a light on something completely different. In this book of Andy Kramer and Al Harris, what they see is that this isn't about female nature at all, and it's much more about the way workplaces have been built and how their dynamics have historically favored men and pushed women out. And that's going to lead to behaviors of rivalry, right? But it's not an innate nature of women. It's how the system is being set up. It's a problem of the workplace designed by men for men to thrive. If you see that what's being valued and the people that are getting up on the board seats and the important positions are males and they behave in a certain way, then what happens is that women tend to adopt more masculine traits with the idea of like, I'll become one of them. You know, they won't see me as a typical woman. I'll be one of the boys. And that's going to help me climb the ladder. But then what happens is that other women don't like them precisely because of this, because it's like, oh, you're changing. Yeah, you're betraying us. So it's really such a tricky environment to navigate if you're a woman trying to make it in the corporate world.
Yeah. And listen, you and I were there, you know, yeah. We climbed the ladder. We got to places where we had S's in front of our VP titles. And you know what it was like to walk that fine line between not being too much of this or too little of that. I think it's a combination, really. I mean, there's some people who are going to be assholes, no matter if they're a male, female, whoever they are. But I think there is more logic to me when I hear about the problem not being inherent in the nature of women. It's more about the dynamics in the workplace and what makes the workplace biased in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So how fortunate are we to have Andy Kramer, who is not only an author, but someone who has been working for decades advocating for women in gendered bias workplaces? And she's truly just such an expert on this matter. So here's part of the conversation we had with her, and it's really fascinating how she breaks this down. Let's listen.
With our work, what we found was that it's not that women are nastier than men are to other men. It's just that because of the stereotypes and biases that we have about women, women are expected to be nice and kind and sweet. We're expected to be supportive and whatever you want, I'm going to do it for you. And so what happens is when a woman behaves in a gender-biased workplace, the way you do this and you do this, and we're going to meet at 5 o'clock to talk about it, everybody's hair catches fire. Who does she think she is? But if Fred did exactly the same thing, they're like, yes, sir, we'll meet you at 5.
Yes.
And so what we found was that it's not just men that hold stereotypes and biases about how women are, but women hold the same stereotypes and biases about other women. In the workplace, what happens is women are expected to be competing with other women. They're not expected to be competing with other men. So the pool of people who we compete with is smaller in a corporate environment. Mm-hmm. Not every woman is nice and kind and sweet. There are a lot of women who you would not want to turn your back on, but that doesn't say that there aren't a lot of men that you wouldn't want to turn your back on mm-hmm. either. What we found was that the expectations are that women are supposed to behave like good girls, nice girls. And if a woman is competing, if the three of us are competing for the same spot, only one of us is going to get it.
Yep.
If we're competing for the same spot and the spot is the girl seat on the management committee, the girl seat on the important team, the men would dispute immediately with me that there's no such thing as a girl seat. But that's because they've never counted the number of seats at the table. What happens is, if I get that seat, then you expect that I'm going to be bringing you up behind me tomorrow. But the trouble is, I don't have any authority over any other seats. And so the only way in many organizations that you're going to get the girl seat is to push me out, because there's always an unlimited number of seats at the table for men, but there are not unlimited numbers of seats for women.
So what we expect from women is very different than what we expect from men. And I had really not internalized that to that degree. And it was only after this conversation and reading the book that I was like, damn it. Yeah, I do that. I do expect them to be better. I do hold women to a higher standard. Yeah.
No, and what's interesting also, if you think about it that way, it ties back to the conversation that we had with Cy Wakeman about accountability and looking at your own ideas and questioning your ideas and saying, wait, what role do I have to play in this? Right. What role do I have to play in this? And to your point, when you're able to take stock of maybe some of the relationships you've had with either female bosses or even female colleagues, if those relationships weren't great, like take a look back and say, wait, did I place unnecessary expectations on this woman? Did I put myself in her shoes? Do I understand what their dynamic was? Or was she just a bitch? Like, really, was she just an asshole? Because that is a possibility.
Because women can be bitches.
Exactly. So we found some amazing stats in Andy and Al's book. And again, the book was published in 2019, and we want to share some of those with you. There might be some variances from then to now, but overall, the story remains the same.
It's stats time.
85% of corporate executives and corporate board members are white men. This is a percentage that sadly has remained practically unchanged for years. And the next stat that we saw that was, you know, sad but true is that women only hold 36% of first level or mid-level manager positions in S&P 500 companies, and they are only 25% of executive or senior leaders or managers. And out of S&P CEOs, only 6% are women. I mean, talk about really stark and depressing stats.
So it's all good when you join and you're a junior. That's great. The problem is when women want to keep climbing the corporate ladder, that's when shit starts getting really hard.
Yeah.
Because it's an environment that is led and favored by men.
Yeah.
And this is not an attack on men. It's not at all, but it's just facts. It's reality. It's how it works. And this leads us to another point in Andy Kramer and Al Harris's book, which is the role that affinity bias plays in maintaining these leadership numbers that skew heavily male. So affinity bias means that people are drawn to people who are like them. You know, it's just a human thing that you will gravitate more towards people that you feel comfortable with, and you feel comfortable with what you know. And it's a completely unconscious process. But the fact is, if today's leadership team is 85% white males, that is what they're going to keep perpetuating, unless there's true self-awareness and a conscious choice to change this. And it's not that men are plotting around the boardroom saying, how can we destroy women? It's just something that happens unconsciously. And it's really hard to break that cycle, especially when you're not even aware of it. So that's why these conversations are really, really important.
Yeah, and talk about like when you hear stuff like that, you're like, oh, wait, so that's why deals done on the golf course or, you know, at the gym or, you know, where guys hang out or guys have certain affinities towards either sports or hobbies or whatever. That's why it makes sense that so much business happens in these sorts of places.
Yeah. But like to use an example that isn't, you know, golf and men, I want to speak to my own experience. And, you know, when I look back, when I was a manager and hiring, I did have affinity bias. You know, I just found myself hiring and looking for people that had a similar sense of humor, vibe, somebody that, you know, would be a, quote, culture fit. It's just more comfortable, right?
Yeah.
And like later on in my career, I began to understand that it's so much more enriching to hire people that are different than you. But it took me a minute to get there.
Right.
And also what happens with affinity bias is like, if you are seeing that what is getting rewarded in your company is male behavior, right? So everybody that's in that super important room behaves this way. Women feel that they have to behave in those masculine ways. So they begin toning down their, you know, their more natural traits, and they become, you know, less soft, more direct, less compassionate, because that's what's being valued. And then at the same time, other women don't like that. And they criticize that. It's like, what you doing? Like, why are you changing? Why are you becoming one of them? Do you think you're better than us? So it's just really so hard to navigate. And, you know, and going back and thinking of all the strong women I work with, especially those in, you know, C-suite level that were in those really high positions, they were all very, I don't want to say masculine, but they had masculine behaviors in the sense that they were very strong, not emotional at all, like very, very strong and direct in the way they talked. They were making this effort to be taken very seriously. And they were amazing professionals, many times like the best players in the room, even though maybe their title wasn't that, but you could see that they had to adapt to get to those roles.
Well, it's funny because I worked for one specific female boss who wasn't a bitch in any way, but she actually went completely the opposite. She went very feminine, but in her style. So in her dress, she was super feminine, always looked great, really well put together. But in her approach to things was very direct.
Yeah, when I mean masculine, it's not the way they dress. It's nothing physical. Yeah. It's just some behavior.
Oh, no, and I get that. I get that. But I'm saying, like, I was trying to like think back and be like, wait a minute, in this one particular case, she had a blend of both. And by the way, when we say male or female, it's not to generalize, you know, women are like this or men are like this. It's just the stereotypes and the perceptions that we normally subscribe, right? To a more female characteristic or a more masculine characteristic. But it's funny how, talking about dress though, I'm taking it to me. When I came into a team, I happened to come into a team at the same time as three other colleagues, because a big boss came in to a new company and he brought us all with him. So it was the big boss, who was a guy, two other guys, and me. And they were all suits, all of them. All of them were suits. And I felt like I needed to be at a certain level. So I went out and I bought a shit ton of suits. In suits. Like, I am formal. You know that. You know I love my heels. But I just didn't feel like, okay, I'm coming into a new company. I'm coming in as part of this team. So even something as subtle as dressing up in a suit, I was trying to portray the message of I'm part of this. And I wasn't even like, to me, it was just, okay, this is what I got to do. And because I was coming into a new company, brand new organization, this was my people. Like, they're my tribe who brought me in. So I had to adapt and be like them. And then, you know, a few months in, I was like, what the hell? And somebody told me, a really cool female colleague that I had, she's like, you know, Glenda, you don't have to wear suits every day. I'm like, I know that now, but I spend a shit ton of money on them. So let me wear them a little more before I go out and get cool new dresses.
Okay, I need to see a picture of those suits now. I did not know this part of your dark past.
Yeah, I was suited up for a good amount of time.
Yeah, so it's really tricky, right? Because when a man behaves assertively, he's strong. He's such a strong leader. But if they lash out and get emotional, it's like, oh, they're standing their ground. Look at how strong he is. But if a woman behaves like that, it's like she's on such a power trip. There's no winning.
And I've seen so many powerful women who were amazing at their jobs, were really nice people to work with. But when they were in work mode, like the switch went off in their brain and they were like completely laser focused on getting shit done. And if that meant getting really assertive and being very direct and throwing a couple of F-bombs here and there, that's what happened. And of course, it was a different expectation. So to everybody, they were like, oh my God, she's such a bitch.
And so this reminds me of a term in Andy and Al's book, and it's called the Goldilocks dilemma. It basically means that women can never win because they're either too hard or too soft, but never just right. It's a balance that's impossible to achieve when you want to be seen as competent and strong, but, you know, also pleasant and caring and selfless. Research finds that women expect female managers to display a higher degree of emotional understanding and support for them. They also expect female managers to see them as equals, understand the complexities of their lives, and provide them with the flexibility to accommodate those complexities. So there's so much weight placed on women's shoulders as leaders.
Yeah, talk about walking a tightrope. How about we go back to our conversation with our expert, Andy Kramer, because she's going to dive deeper into this concept.
Very often, the junior woman might be looking at expecting the senior woman to be her mom or to be her best friend, her mentor. And the reality is that the senior person is the senior person, the S before the VP. And is she expecting the same treatment out of the men who have the S before the VP? And many situations, the answer to that, if you look really into yourself, is no, that you don't expect the men to treat you the same way that you expect the senior women. And so that's a problem that we have to acknowledge and overcome. We have to put ourselves in the shoes of the other person when we're evaluating their behavior. Very often, if we understood the pressures and the situation that the senior woman or the woman who's acting like somehow it's got to be all her glory or whatever, a lot of that can be from being self-conscious or concerned that you're not good enough or not having the confidence level. And so you have to get to the point where you can call each other on it. A woman's complaining because you're not cutting her enough slack on getting her projects in on time. She has a family and you should know better because you're a woman and she's not turning her projects in on time. Well, she wouldn't be complaining about the guy who's upset that she's not turning her projects in on time because she doesn't expect him to accommodate her schedule the way she expects you to accommodate her schedule.
I'm hearing you and I was like, wait, is that a bad thing for me to have that expectation of the other female leaders to maybe give me a hand? Like, was that a bad thing? Is my expectation on myself to have to do it for somebody else? Is that a bad thing? Like, not to put a judgment on it, but just to rethink the biases that we had. Because if you're in a place to help somebody and you don't, I kind of think you're an asshole. I'm sorry. Like,
well, that's Madeleine Albright. But Madeleine Albright also had another quote that I think is very important that most people don't know about, which is that she talked about in her book about how she would go into the meetings. Now, she's the boss and people would talk around her and talk over her, whatever. And she said, you have to pick your shots.
Yes. That's true too. Okay. Absolutely.
And so I'm not here as an advocate for women being bitches, being nasty, being assholes. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is we have to understand that in order to succeed in biased workplaces, women have things imposed on them. And because of that, we can't expect that they're going to be our best friend. We need to be able to acknowledge that she doesn't have to be a friend of mine in order to be a good boss. She doesn't have to cut me some slack because no guy, not only would no guy do it for me, but I would never expect him to.
Right. Yeah. So back to the expectation thing, because I'm wondering also, like, obviously we're all women having this conversation, but I wonder, like, if guys look at it the same way, like, do guys look at other guys with the same expectations that we put on other women?
No, because there's always room for one more guy at the table.
Yeah. Sad, but true.
Female workplace leaders, I think they're still relatively new. And therefore, we either have imposter syndrome and we overcompensate by projecting this image of strength and confidence to the point that it actually crosses into kind of like bitch territory. Of course, that doesn't happen with all female bosses, but it has happened with quite a few in my experience.
So listening to this and after looking at all the research that we've done, it is so important to become more self-aware, right, of our biases. And then it's about really putting our heads together to think, how can we tackle this? How can we make the situation better? And how can we each contribute to making it better?
Again, going back to how can you help a situation? How can we help each other in a situation? I think a really important part, and we've been saying this from the beginning, and Eileen, you have been super open about how your eyes were opened when you started doing the research. And that's recognize your own biases. Like number one, straight out of the gate, recognize, open your eyes a little bit, be a little bit more self-aware about the kinds of biases and misperceptions you have when you're dealing with another woman, whether it's a boss or a colleague, and recognize when you are expecting more from that woman or from women in general than men. Because if we all hold each other to that really high standard or have expectations beyond the normal ones that we would have for a guy, then how fair is that really? And when you see someone and she's, in your opinion, in uber bitch mode, take a minute and ask yourself, is that really the case? Like, is she really being an uber bitch right now? Let me analyze the situation. Let me put myself in her shoes. Would I be saying the same thing if that person was a guy? And, you know, if it is the case and that person is just being an asshole, then we don't stand for that behavior, whether it's coming from a guy or a girl. Like, it doesn't matter. Or, you know, non-binary, if that's how you identify. But, you know, just be more cognizant of your own misperceptions and your own biases before putting so much judgment on somebody else, I think is like the main thing. Aside from the fact that, you know, we know that Andy outlined some really cool strategies. And Eileen, I know that you have those really clear in your head, and maybe we can talk about those.
Yeah. So Andy highlights that it's really important to become a role model. You know, it's always easy to criticize others, but, you know, think, how can you be the best version of a female colleague or leader? They also say it's really important to celebrate each other's successes as women. You know, we got to hype each other up, creating a sisterhood, you know, being part of affinity groups. That is also really important because there's always strength in numbers. Sharing our stories is really critical. It just gives us, you know, a different perspective. We feel more seen.
I am there for all of those. And anybody who knows me knows that I am a very big proponent of affinity groups and mentoring programs. I've been both a mentor and a mentee. Some with better success than others, you know, with mentee programs and mentoring programs. They're not all 100% super successful all the time. You know, sometimes it's just a matter of like the dynamic, whether you click with somebody or you don't. But the fact of the matter is, if you have somebody that you can look up to and confide in and ask for advice, I think that's all the better, even if it's an informal relationship, because a lot of companies have mentoring programs, but others really don't. So maybe seek out an informal sort of senior leader, or even, it doesn't even have to be senior leader, just seek out somebody who you think you can learn from and think about what you can offer that other person, because any relationship is reciprocal. You have to be able to offer something and, you know, a give and take. But I do think that all those steps and all those things that you talked about, Eileen, celebrating each other's successes, standing up for each other, you know, your success doesn't diminish my success. Or if you get a great project, that doesn't mean I'm not going to get the next great project. That just means that, hey, let me celebrate you. Let me learn from you. Let me show you that I can also collaborate and maybe you can help me too.
Yeah.
I remember feeling so ashamed, feeling bullied by another woman. And I remember going straight to the bathroom, crying and thinking, is this the way that women support each other in this company? Later on in life, I just thought, okay, this is sad. This is probably the way that she learned to defend herself in the corporate world. Probably she got bullied herself. So in the end, it's up to us to just break this bad pattern and make things different for the generations to come.
Okay, let's share some really eye-opening stats that Andy walked us through in our conversation.
The studies show that until you have a third women in senior leadership roles, it's not going to change.
Jesus.
One more study, which is that if the people who are setting the compensation are all men, men make more money. If people are setting compensation and there's one woman, men make more money. If people are setting compensation and there are two women on the team who are setting compensation, there's a better chance that women are going to be more equal because one woman can't do it herself.
It all comes back to, we need to support other women coming up the ladder. We need to make up a really conscious effort. I mean, it's great to have male allies, but the change will happen when we as women come together. Okay, I think that statement merits some really powerful and moving music. The change will happen when we as women come together. That's basically the takeaway. Girl power.
Girl power. We would love to thank Andy Kramer. She was an amazing guest.
We're so honored to have somebody with her level of expertise on our show.
Please check out her book, Beyond Bias, The Path to End Gender Inequality at Work. It's available now for pre-sale. And a huge thanks to our listeners who shared their experiences with us. It's really made this conversation so much more enlightening and enriching.
And before signing off, Glenda and I want to point out that there are plenty of examples of fabulous, supportive female managers and leaders. We have both had amazing female bosses and colleagues. Our listeners have too. Here are some sound bites highlighting positive examples of amazing women in the workplace.
I have had great experiences working with women, a lot of them actually. My favorite traits they had were directness, openness. I really like when people have a collaborative mindset.
But I think that's because she was just very confident about herself. And I think that is what makes a difference in having a good boss that's a female versus a bad boss that's a female.
I think good female bosses, they know what it entitles to get where you are. They know how much you have worked and how much you have sacrificed to escalate the corporate ladder. So they can be more empathetic, more understanding, and also less competitive. They want you to shine because that will make them shine.
They were also compassionate, encouraging, and firm, but they were also respectful. And I think their best quality was that they were emotionally intelligent. You know, what made them stand out and really build a team under them that was willing to follow them, which is really the true definition of a leader.
Today's episode of Surfing Corporate was produced and edited by me, Eileen Mercier, and made better by the feedback of Glenda Bagnens. Surfing Corporate's amazing intern is Stephanie Hildesucker. If you like the show, please spread the word by sharing it with a friend. Sign up for our newsletter at surfingcorporate.com and follow us on Instagram and LinkedIn. You can always reach out to us at hello@surfingcorporate.com. We'd love to hear from you. Our original theme song is by Chaliwa Music. Thanks so much for listening. Hang in there, corporate surfers. See you next time.